Hi, my name is Amanda Panacea, and you're listening to the Healer Revolution podcast. This is a community for self-healers, biohackers, practitioners, and any other helping professionals. You're in the right place if you're seeking conversations about how pain becomes passion, the connection between physical, energetic, mental, and our spiritual self, finding your body's ancient wisdom, the latest biohacking technologies, clinical research, and if you just want to nerd out about complex biochemistry and quantum physics. But this is also for entrepreneurs who seek infinite abundance and a supportive community. So pour a cup of King Coffee or Sistis Tea and let's join the revolution. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Healer Revolution podcast. I am your host, Amanda Panacea, and I'm really excited today to be interviewing Clark Engelbert of Nutritional Analytics. Hello, Clark. Thank you so much for joining me.
Hey, what's up, Amanda? Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so I found you originally through Instagram, which I'm sure most people do, looking more into HTMA and mineral balancing. And I was kind of on this quest to find like how deep this test could go, because I knew it could go really deep. And I felt like the trainings that I had taken were just like not it. I was like, no, there's more to this. So that's how I found you. And then I took your course, HTMA Secrets, which was phenomenal. Highly recommend to everyone out there, practitioners, non-practitioners. But today I'd love to get to know your background, your history, because you have a really great story and can attest to how amazing mineral balancing is.
Right. Agreed. Yeah. So things started for me, if we just want to jump right into it.
Go for it.
Probably around when I was back in college at the University of Arizona in the mid-2000s. You know, I think a lot of people in our generation, millennials especially, you know, kind of went to college to like have fun and play a lot and that sort of thing. And so, you know, I did that for a couple of years. I was in school, doing well in school, but, you know, it sort of was like college was this giant break from high school and partied a lot with friends. And that went on for a few years and that caught up to me basically after doing that for a couple of years. And I ended up having some pretty outrageous panic attacks when I was 21. Out of nowhere, didn't really know what anxiety was or really had no idea what panic attacks were. So I had these panic attacks, went to the emergency room a couple different times over the span of a few days. And medicine didn't really have answers for me at that point about what had happened or what to do about that. So I kind of spiraled out of control. Because these events that happened, these panic attacks were so overwhelming and I didn't know what they were, that I became sort of obsessed with figuring out what was going on and just looping in my head about what had happened, right? And so they weren't able to put a label on what had happened. So I didn't know what it was. I had no idea how to prevent those panic attacks from happening again in the future. So I, you know, that led to more panic attacks, more anxiety over time. And ultimately, you know, went through the medical system for a while, maybe about a year to 2 years of just trying to figure out what's going on, going back to my PCP a bunch of times, going back to the ER a bunch of times, and just sort of on a quest to figure out what had happened and what was going on. And finally, I ended up on some medications for anxiety and depression. And at that point in my sort of journey, I was just happy to be diagnosed with something, you know, because I felt like all of this was in my head and it was like, you know, is this what going crazy sort of feels like? You know, I had those distinct thoughts when I would sit in the emergency room, waiting to be seen, you know, a couple different times for those panic attacks. And so, got on medications for anxiety and depression, an SSRI, cycled through a bunch of different SSRIs, a benzo as well, a short-acting benzo, cycled through a bunch of those as well, and just ended up getting some relief initially from those medications. But then about a year into it, I started to notice interdose withdrawal from like the benzo, and I would have heightened symptoms. In between doses of the benzo. that I was on. So I, you know, kept having to increase the dose. The doctors that I was seeing kept increasing the dose. And that went on for another like 4 or 5 years. And then
that's a long time on benzos. Yeah.
It's a very long time. And so, you know, coming off them was pretty harrowing. that journey was a bit, just ridiculous and dramatic. And so, you know, about a year into things, I started to sort of look into, well, okay, medicine doesn't have any solutions to this problem that I'm dealing with, right? The way I was feeling temporarily, there was like a solution, but things started to get worse again and spiral out of control as I needed more and more of the medications. And I was like, this can't go on forever. There has to be some sort of resolution to this. And so I started to look into like alternative and holistic health and like that sort of thing. Came across Julia Ross's work and Joan Matthews Larson, who they had written some books about depression and anxiety and how to heal those things naturally. And so around like, you know, 2011, 2012, after about 5 years of searching and going through a bunch of different, you know, alternative and holistic methods. I've been to naturopathic doctors at that point many different times, ran a whole bunch of different types of functional testing. I finally was able to come off the medications that I was on around 2012. And that's sort of around the period of time that I found mineral balancing. You know, so I was in a pretty bad spot after coming off of medications. And that took about 7 weeks. I had to go to a facility in Minnesota and come off those medications, like medically supervised, because you really can't come off benzos quickly without some medical supervision, because you can seize and really some really bad things can happen. So, did that. And then, so came off these medications at a facility after about 7 weeks. We did a rapid taper with some anti-seizure medications on board to prevent that. And, you know, came off of those medications and was probably in the worst spot that I'd ever been in. Much worse off than I was before.
Yeah, and 7 weeks is fast for benzos.
Like, it is.
And it's really fast.
I know. I had tried so many different times to come off of them slowly, right? And I think you probably know maybe about the Ashton Manual, and people that are in the benzo space know about the Ashton Manual, about switching over from shorter acting benzos to longer acting ones so that the withdrawal isn't as extreme. I tried that a bunch of times. It didn't really work for me because my lifestyle was kind of haywire, and I was a professional musician and, you know, working all these side jobs and dealing with all of this stuff at the same time. So tried to come off them slowly but surely. That didn't work. And so I was at the point where I was like, you know what, this just needs to happen, and I need to rip the Band-Aid off and live with the consequences, basically, at that point. Mm-hmm. So came off of them, and then, you know, came back home to Arizona at that point, and was really looking around and going, well, I'm worse off than ever. And at that facility, it was kind of a cool place. They did like IVs of glutathione and magnesium. It was kind of like a holistically minded drug rehabilitation place. But I was on like 50 different supplements, and I was feeling worse than ever, had really bad insomnia and all of the post-acute withdrawal symptoms that you can have from benzos. So at that point, I had found mineral balancing. Basically, someone at the facility had mentioned hair testing to me, and that they'd done a hair test, and I thought that was kind of interesting and intriguing. And they told me a little bit about it. And I knew of this lady who had done hair testing, Pam Killeen. I had read one of her books. And so I kind of went through that when I got home and reached out to her and contacted her in late 2012, early 2013, and ended up getting my first hair test. And so from there, you know, you could say the rest is a little bit history.
What pattern did you have on that first one?
Massive bowl pattern, really low sodium potassium ratio. My NADK ratio is 0.88. calcium, yeah, calcium magnesium ratio was like 35 or something, so really high. So I was in a deep, deep bowel pattern, and I felt that, quite prominently when I got it back. And so, Pam was able to describe a lot of the symptoms and things that I had been feeling with, kind of eerie accuracy. And I was even more intrigued by that and then started on a program. It took a while for me to notice a difference, right? Because I was in such a haywire spot having come off the benzos. But things started to slowly but surely happen over the next like 6 months. And that really sold me on mineral balancing. I went through a big nickel elimination in that first 6 to 9 months. My calcium magnesium ratio came down pretty dramatically after having, dealt with some lifestyle stuff that I was dealing with as well. And after those changes, I was like, okay, this is legit. And it sort of incentivized me to stay on the program and keep going with it.
Awesome. So let's back up a bit. What exactly is mineral balancing? Like, what is the definition, would you say?
Mineral balancing, I would say, is we're using our knowledge of nutrient and mineral interactions to balance the entire system of minerals inside of you all at one time.
Sounds
So,
very complex.
kind of complex, but there's some things like layered into that that we kind of have to walk through. But it's this idea that the minerals exist in a system inside of you, right? Minerals don't just exist individually inside of you, right? They exist in this broader system, which means that they all interact with each other in your body. And so understanding that idea is probably the most central concept to mineral balancing that there is. Mineral balancing, we're not just putting back minerals, right? But we want to first recognize that the mineral system exists. All these elements interact inside of you at all times. And then we want to balance that whole system all at once. And in order to do that, in order to actually engage in mineral balancing, you have to know how all those elements interact with each other so that you don't inadvertently create new imbalances or make existing imbalances worse. But the balancing, like the mineral balancing, is balancing the whole system all at once. That's basically it.
Yeah, and it's funny, after learning this, I felt, wow, it's so insane that we all just were taking random supplements from people selling them on the internet. And people are like, oh, well, I've been on a B vitamin complex for my entire life because I have MTHFR, or I've been taking zinc for 5 years. And you start to realize, wow, we actually probably are really messing up our mineral system by chronically taking certain things or high dosing other types of supplements like just magnesium. So it really brings light to that like bioindividuality, but also like what season of life are you in? We have to kind of keep following up with it because the balancing aspect is equally as important. Like when I first started, I was like, oh, I'll just get the calcium shell done, taken care of, and then I'm
Right.
done.
That's I think you're hitting at something that's really important. You
Yeah.
can't deal with mineral imbalances individually. And this sort of speaks to a little bit, not only about the system idea, but like when we run a hair test or a hair analysis on you, the hair test is actually very misunderstood in the alternative health space as well. What we're using it for in mineral balancing is to get a measurement of the entire mineral system all at one time. That's how I think of the hair test. It's a measurement of the whole system of elements, and it's one discrete entity. Most people who are running this test in the alternative health space think of the hair test as a measurement of 23 discrete elements, right? And like calcium is high. Sodium is low, potassium is low, magnesium is high. That's sort of their understanding. And that is their operating framework is not running through the mineral system idea, right? So everything is separate and distinct from one another. But when you understand that these elements interact with each other, that really opens things up for practitioners and for clients as well to help understand that or help them to understand that you cannot give individual minerals and deal with one problem at a time. It's just not possible. Unless you have like an overt you know, if you have a really bad iron deficiency situation going on, or really bad like iodine deficiency, you can remediate or deal with overt deficiency states, but to really reverse conditions over a long period of time and achieve optima, that's sort of the difference between what a lot of traditional nutritional sciences is aiming at or aiming for, and what we're aiming at as well. So like the goal of mineral balancing is also very different.
Yeah. Even one of my teachers who was brilliant in my graduate program, he did not have nice things to say about the HTMA. And I was so crushed because I had originally done the test before I went back to school. And I was like, oh, but I liked that test. And then now I hear him speak now, and I saw him do like a video on the test, and I was like, oh, he doesn't understand it at all. He doesn't even know how to read it. So that made me feel better. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the big problem in even in research circles. A lot of researchers, there was a review that was published in 2018. I can't remember the journal, but they basically did a full review of a lot of the literature of hair analysis. And many of the researchers in their methods didn't know to cut the hair sample from a specific place. And that mineral deposition into the hair is not uniform like it is in the blood. So they would get, a lot of researchers in the past would get hair samples from like really far out on the distal end of the hair. And they would compare that to something at the very close edges of the scalp. And they would consider that a valid comparison. But as we know, you know, this is more in the weeds. The further out you go, right, the mineral deposition is not uniform. It can change dramatically every month, 2 months, 3 months, right? So even high level researchers in this space are sort of grasping at straws a little bit and don't fully understand either the nature of hair testing or even what we're really going for in mineral balancing and measuring that mineral system.
Yeah, interesting. So why do you know how to read this so differently than most people? Where is your training from?
So I learned and trained with and got certified through Dr. Lawrence Wilson, you know, many years ago, around 2018, after I had been on a mineral balancing program for many years. You know, I have a background in nutritional sciences and biochemistry, went to school for those things, but trained with Dr. Wilson primarily. And, you know, Dr. Wilson learned from Dr. Paul Ek, who is the guy in the space that basically fleshed out all of these interpretation principles of hair analysis back in like the 70s and 80s. And he's the one that really, I think, set the stage for using this test in a really unique way.
Yeah. And so there's different labs and different ranges. Are these other people's interpretations of them? What's the big difference?
Lots of big differences. yeah, lots of big ones. I would say primarily between the commercial labs around the world, the biggest difference between these labs is that, and in the approach, is that many labs will wash the hair at the lab with really heavy solvents and detergents. And ARL and TEI, the two labs that are, I think, are really good labs to use to do the analysis, don't wash the hair at the lab with really heavy solvents and detergents. And that's critical. It might seem like a minor difference, but it's critical because when you use really heavy solvents and detergents to wash the hair, you can wash out the water-soluble elements like sodium and potassium. And so you can totally skew those readings. Sort of embedded in that is the idea that the readings of the first four elements on a hair test that we see through ARL, calcium, magnesium, sodium, and potassium, are paramount in doing the interpretation of the hair analysis, which sort of, you know, dovetails nicely into the differences between X approach and maybe many others out there that don't recognize the importance of those elements, right? So Dr. Eck put really heavy emphasis on measuring those first four elements because they make up 99% of the mineral content in the body, right? So that's number one. To that end, the body has evolved very elaborate mechanisms for controlling the absorption and partitioning of those elements, right? So many of those underlying control and partitioning mechanisms of those major elements are hormonal in nature, right? So you can actually do almost a complete hormonal panel on someone by looking at those first four elements and the ratios thereof, right? We can do like an analysis of the oxidation rate or metabolic rate, which we can get into maybe a little later, but that's really a measurement of the cellular effect of the adrenal and thyroid hormones just by looking at the balance of sodium and potassium and calcium and magnesium, right? So there's a very large hormonal component to the mineral analysis because the hormones regulate those elements in the tissues. And so this puts the interpretation in a little different light. It's not strictly a measurement on the hair test of these elements, of the intake of these elements in your diet. It's a measurement of intake, absorption, and excretion and metabolism, right? So that's a very important idea that very few people who are outside of X, circles, very few people know that. So that's number one. But number two, a lot of the mineral interactions that we sort of talk about are run through or affect sodium and potassium. So sodium and potassium affect your body's ability to utilize many other elements in the body and on the hair test, right? And so like if sodium and potassium decline on a hair test, calcium and magnesium may precipitate upwards because of their antagonism with one another. But then many of the trace elements you can't absorb and utilize as well when sodium and potassium decline as well. So the hormonal component is very important for reading the test. And then the interactions piece, how those elements interact with each other and how you're able to utilize many of these elements is largely dependent on the sodium and potassium levels and then also calcium and magnesium. So it's those two things, the hormonal component and then the interactions are largely mediated or run through those bigger four elements as well. So there's a really heavy emphasis on, studying calcium and magnesium ratio or the sodium potassium ratio or the calcium potassium ratio or the sodium magnesium ratio. That's like 80% of the interpretation we're doing when we do this analysis using X interpretation approach.
Yeah, makes perfect sense. And so let's talk about how do heavy metals fit into this, because mineral balancing is by far the most effective way to detox heavy metals that I have ever come across. And I feel like by far the safest.
Yeah, both of those things are very true. Part of this mineral story that a lot of people don't understand is that heavy metals will gain access to cellular compartments through mineral channels and transporters. And this idea is called ionic mimicry. It's not the only way that metals gain access to cellular compartments. There's other ways. Molecular mimicry is another thing that like metals can mimic endogenous biomolecules and sort of connect or latch onto proteins. And certain metals, when they do that, they will look like proteins, and protein transporters will sort of usher in metals into cellular compartments because of that as well. But this metal and the mineral story that we're telling, you can't tell it without understanding how the metals and minerals interact with each other as well at the same time. And really understanding metals toxicology like 101 is to understand this idea of ionic mimicry. How do metals even just get into the body and into tissue compartments in the first place? That's really what this idea or this concept is answering, which I think is very important because no one's really even asking that question in the alternative health space. But it's really a matter of metals. We could back up even a little bit now, maybe a minute.
Yeah.
If we go back to like chemistry, many of the metals and the minerals have very similar physicochemical characteristics. If you look at like zinc and cadmium on the periodic table, they're right next to each other. They're very, very similar in like electron configuration, in shape, in size. And so that's very important for setting the stage for ionic mimicry. So what happens in the body, like if you have a mineral deficiency or something, or an imbalance even, if you're exposed to metals in your environment, your body will actually take up the metal more readily through these mineral absorption molecules in your gut, right? So that's kind of like, you can think of that like phase one of ionic mimicry is, or you can go back even further. Phase one is really how they look similar atomically. Phase two is at the level of the gut, they can utilize those mineral channels and transporters to get into the body. And then once they get in there and are transported throughout the body, connected to these mineral channels and transporters and proteins, those metals actually substitute for minerals in important enzymes and proteins, and can act as like a inferior substitute part for the minerals. So the connection here between the interactions between the metals and the minerals are, I mean, it's fascinating, but it really helps us to understand like the movement and metabolism of metals more than anything else actually that's out there. So in mineral balancing, it kind of, that answers the question, well, why do we even do mineral balancing in the first place? What's the point of that, right? You know, because it sounds cool and it's like, okay, well, let's balance the minerals. But then what is the end result of that? Because there are these profound interactions between the metals and minerals, when you balance the minerals and that entire mineral system, what happens is you're sort of engaging in reverse engineering all of the mineral imbalances that led to the metal bioaccumulation in the first place. And that mineral balancing process basically antagonizes those metals, and you're able to eliminate them not only a lot more safely, but a lot more profoundly and with a lot more power, basically. And we can get into maybe some of the nuances of that and the dynamics of that in terms of like cellular, intracellular versus extracellular. But that dichotomy helps us to understand why chelating protocols don't work as well as mineral balance.
Gosh, I've met so many people harmed by chelating. I would never ever recommend it.
Right, exactly.
So explain why chelation is so difficult for the body.
Couple things. Number one, many of the chelating agents are not substrate specific. So this is really important to keep in mind. Many chelating agents cannot be designed to be substrate specific. And so what that means is that a chelating agent like designed to target lead or some other metal could target lead, but it could also target other minerals which look similar to lead, like calcium and zinc and iron and copper. So you can chelate out lead using EDTA, but you may also chelate out some minerals along with it. And so if we understand that metals are gaining access more readily to cellular compartments in the first place through these mineral imbalances, it sort of puts this idea of chelation in a different light, where you're going to be making existing mineral imbalances worse potentially in that situation. So that can be very destructive, number one, right? If you're already minerally imbalanced or have deficiencies or excesses, that could be very problematic. Number two, many chelating agents don't cross cell membranes either. So if you have lead or arsenic or cadmium or whatever metal in a particular tissue compartment, like your heart or your brain or your kidneys, many of those chelating agents simply can't pass through cell membranes and get at those metals deeply buried in these tissue compartments Bone is another notorious one where certain metals can be stored, like lead and cadmium and aluminum, right? So not only are metals or the chelating agents, they're not really doing, you could potentially make mineral imbalances worse, but they can't even really cross cell membranes. So if you have chronic toxicity of the metals, which is really what we're talking about here, it's also pretty ineffective for dealing with that situation. And, you know, it's kind of well known in medicine, not well known, but it's known, it's in like the textbooks, that there's not even a chelating agent for a metal like cadmium, because of cadmium is bound so tightly to certain intracellular proteins that they have not been able to design a chelating agent for that metal. Mm-hmm. So those are the two main ones. Now, not to totally dog on chelation, there is, I think, a use case for it. Like if you have an acute exposure to lead or something else occupationally, that can actually save your life if you go to the emergency room and they give you a chelating agent. Mm-hmm. You know, they can chelate out that metal from the blood when you're acutely exposed, but it's not going to do much in terms of intracellular tissue compartments.
Yeah. And what about like binders, like chlorella, apple citrus pectin, fulvic acids? Can those be beneficial in certain situations? So I know there's like a big argument, use binders or not during mineral balancing.
I'm not a huge fan of them. I think a lot of those products can bring their own risks of metal toxicity themselves. Chlorella, spirulina in particular, and humic and fulvic acid. So my approach in mineral balancing is really first do no harm. And I take that very, very seriously. I've seen enough evidence and literature on herbs that are loaded with toxic metals.
Yeah.
And humic and fulvic acid products, shilajit and others that are loaded with toxic metals as well. I think we all kind of remember that company, Black Oxygen Organics.
Yes.
I think they're still going through this class action lawsuit because their product was loaded with heavy metals. You know, so I think binders can be used strategically. There are some safer ones like modified citrus pectin. But again, you really have to do research on not only where they're sourcing a lot of the raw material for the product, but then what does the processing look like that can introduce metals into the situation? So I really don't think they're worth the risk, truthfully. However, like if we think about mineral balancing, what is mineral balancing doing at a core level? It's upregulating your own metal binding proteins, right? So like metallothionein and others get upregulated massively through the mineral balancing process. That helps you to bind metals as they're mobilized and excrete them. And then like if you're eating plenty of cooked veggies, taking some of the other supplements that we recommend, we're not technically using them as binders, but like the soluble fiber in the cooked veggies acts as like a binder as well in the gut. And you're getting the side benefit of all of the nutrient density from consuming a lot of cooked veggies at the same time.
So what are all those aspects of like the other parts of the program besides just do a hair test, take the supplements?
Yeah. I mean, so it's theoretically, it's kind of complicated, but in practice, it's quite simple. We make recommendations for a bunch of different supplements that are strategically designed to balance the mineral system based on your test, right? So the supplement aspect is pretty big. And then we make use of, you know, sort of like a modified paleo diet that's really nutrient dense. So lots of cooked veggies, high quality meats, and then, you know, a lot of raw dairy as well. But the idea is that we want to emphasize nutrient density, but also avoid toxicity of many common foods that some people think of as like healthy. Sort of like organ meats in certain situations, chocolate in certain situations, a lot of fish in certain situations are loaded with mercury. So we want to sort of design the diet around this more conceptual idea of maximizing nutrient density, which a lot of people in paleo get, but also avoiding toxicity from common foods now that are loaded with toxic metals, which a lot of people miss. So the supplements, the diet, and then really a few detoxification procedures. I think most notably the use of a near infrared sauna, a la like Sauna Space. You know, and there's other lifestyle things that we make recommendations for or on, since really getting out of your sympathetic nervous system is critical for upregulating your own detoxification enzymes in your body.
Yeah, so
that's mostly it.
Yeah. I tend to heavily recommend nature, light, like the most basic, simple things. And then I also do like the emotional healing, trauma healing, transformation coaching, because I feel like the people that I tend to work with, and I'm sure you're very similar, they're already doing so many things. They're already on that diet. Wow. They're already doing all the things, but they're still in this chronic stress response, which mineral balancing, of course, can really help with. But having those tools to also be able to recognize, like, I'm in a lifestyle stress pattern. What does that mean? How do I get out of this? What is it inside of me that I maybe need to shift and work on? And even just that, I tell people, you know, even if you took no supplements, if you did these things in 3 months, your hair test will most likely be pretty different.
So right. I think a lot of people doing those things, that's all a very good start. But once you get into getting a look at your initial hair test, and we can really use the magic or secret sauce of mineral balancing is understanding these nutrient and mineral interactions. And once we get a handle on that and we can give you supplements really strategically, really what we're doing is forcibly manipulating these mineral levels and ratios into balance using our knowledge of these interactions. There is no other system out there like that. So people sometimes will come to me and they're like, yeah, I've been through detox before, and I've been through these other programs that are maybe doing kind of vaguely similar things, but there really isn't anything else like this program. And many people are often shocked that not only can we give them a lot fewer supplements, but it works so much better than a lot of these other systems that are out there that are throwing 20, 30 different supplements at their problem.
Yeah, where I tend to see people being stuck is with chronic parasites, chronic candida, chronic histamine issues. And that's really where I was stuck too. Like everything was just like, keep doing mold cleanses, keep doing parasite cleanses. And I was like, no, there has to be a deeper imbalance to this. And I know that metals are probably a part of it. So can you explain why you don't have to do parasite, mold, some of the functional medicine stuff, like targeting pathogens with mineral balancing? Like, how does this help resolve all of those chronic issues?
It's really a question of how does your detoxification and immune system work in the first place? A lot of these processes are mineral mediated. And we can kind of think about this maybe specifically through the lens of like your antioxidant enzymes. Your antioxidant enzymes, like superoxide dismutase, catalase, glutathione, are all mineral dependent, right? And so that makes up at least part of your endogenous detoxification response. So mineral balancing is really sort of resuscitating or innervating your body's own detoxification and immune pathways such that they get upregulated so much that if you are if you have accumulated parasites or mold or other biologic toxins or even synthetic toxicants, the body gets to work on those things too. I tend to focus on like heavy metals because there's a direct link or correlation between the metals and the minerals, right? Ionic mimicry is that sort of glue that holds those two elements or those two sets of elements together, but it's a little more of a roundabout mechanisms for elimination of these other toxicants. But the idea is that just look at how does your detoxification and immune system work in the first place? Most of those processes that are working, you know, theoretically at rest are mineral dependent. And so through mineral balancing, all of those systems get upregulated massively. The body goes, whoa, we might have parasites or mold or candida or whatever else, benzene, phthalates. Let's get to work on eliminating them, because our own detoxification response is so buoyed and so innervated. So it does sort of make the need for like the cleanses and whatever other systems are out there, those approaches are very allopathic in nature, where they want to focus on the pathogen or the toxicant. Yeah. We do not care about the pathogen or toxicant at all. Right. And it's not that we don't want to not eliminate them, but that's not how the body works in the first place, in a robust manner to keep you safe and healthy from those things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It makes so much sense when you put it like that. So what can someone expect when they are going to embark on a mineral balancing journey? I think a lot of people always think, oh, well, I'll give it 6 months and I'll be better. And when I set out at first, I kept getting my tests back and being like, why does it look worse? Am I doing it wrong? And I was doing it wrong, first of all. But second of all, that wasn't even bad. That's what I've come to find out. Like, that retracing concept of kind of going back through your patterns is so just amazing to me. And I love talking about that.
Well, first of all, I would say, mineral balancing is a long-term approach to healing. So I tell most clients it's going to take 2 to 3 years to really get at your entire toxic metal and other toxic burden that you have, which most people have been exposed to these things at a rate that they can't even really fathom, starting in utero, right? So it's a little bleak to maybe get into that. But there are upwards of 80,000 industrial chemicals that are used in the Western world that everyone is exposed to through the food, air, and water from when they're conceived, right? So people aren't really aware of the nature of the toxicity of the modern world. And there are some really good papers on that. If people are interested, if they want to like look into that, this isn't just something I'm saying. It's not just, I'm pulling it out of my ass right now. go and check out, there's a really great study by a couple of world famous researchers, Landrigan and Grandjean, The Developmental Neurotoxicity of Industrial Chemicals. They really paint the picture. It's actually quite an easy study to read. It's not that technical. It's more of a review. But they talk about all of the different unregulated chemicals and toxicants that are used in industry and agriculture for domestic purposes that human beings are exposed to that they have never been exposed to evolutionarily, or they've been exposed to like a million fold of what they would have been exposed to, tens of thousands of years ago in terms of metals, right? So the nature of the toxicity of the modern world is not really fully understood by most people. So that means that it's going to take a little while longer to unwind a lot of that. So 2 to 3 years, it's a long process. But that's not to say that, things won't start moving in 3 to 4 months, yeah. Right? We can make pretty significant changes sometimes in that time period, but it's these small changes that build up over time that accrue. And you sort of go back and you look at like a year when you started, you go, things are so dramatically different from that point. But your body has a certain limit that it can't eliminate everything all at once, right? If you did, you could potentially harm yourself. Yeah, exactly. Right? So things have to be done slowly over time in a stepwise fashion for safety purposes, right? And but what you were sort of hinting at with retracing is also sort of another interesting idea layered onto this longer time cycle of 2 to 3 years, which is that when you get on mineral balancing, you're actually unwinding all of these old mineral patterns that you've been through before that led up to that initial hair test. So there's a lot of different ways that mineral imbalances can manifest on the hair test. And they represent the different ways in which your body is adapting to external and internal stressors. And so as we sort of go back through, or as we put you on a protocol, the supplements are going to cause your body to go back through all of these old patterns that led up to that initial one. And that's what we call retracing, essentially. It's sort of a rewinding process of all of those old patterns that you've been through before.
Yeah, such a cool phenomenon. I like to explain it kind of like a painting. Like if you were born with a blank canvas, but even then you're not born with a blank canvas. And each layer of paint is like a trauma, an exposure, a stressful time period. And so we just are peeling back the layers one by one till we get to the very bottom.
Yeah, that's a unknown. Really
good... Yeah, who knows how long it'll take. But luckily the HTMA is a very affordable test. So that also, it's probably a tenth the cost of a functional medicine test.
Right. Exactly. That was something that it was sort of funny. After I had been through that, like holistic rehab program, which cost like $50,000, I found HTMA and like the first test was like $200. And I was like, what? this is actually working and it's like infinitely cheaper.
Yeah, exactly. So a couple questions I really would love your take on. There was two. The first is copper, bioavailable copper, and how we get into the weeds with copper, because I know there's so many different opinions out there and people are just very confused about it. So can you explain how we can have these massive imbalances in copper?
Yeah. So I think maybe first to understand is that for each of the elements, there's like a range of safe intake or optimal intake. And you can end up with either copper deficiency or copper toxicity. That's number one, right? There are people out there that say copper toxicity doesn't exist, which is a little batty in my opinion. You can get too much of any element, you can get too much water. Right. So there's a range for each element of safe or optimal intake, but it's not just intake of the elements that matters individually. Like with copper, metals affect copper, zinc affects copper, iron affects copper, calcium affects copper. So if some of these elements that are antagonistic or synergistic to copper are out of balance, that can cause copper toxicity more readily. As one example, if you have a zinc deficiency, which is very, very common now, subclinical zinc deficiency is super common amongst many, many people for various reasons, especially the vegetarian and vegan community. You know, if you're consistently getting insufficient zinc intake, that can actually lead to copper toxicity more readily. If you've got a copper IUD or you're taking birth control with synthetic estrogen, estrogen can affect copper retention in the tissues. So you can end up with copper toxicity that way. Copper is also affected, or I should say, the copper binding protein ceruloplasmin is profoundly affected by thyroid hormone. Thyroid hormone sends signals to the liver to activate ceruloplasmin so that you have something to bind to copper in the liver. So it can be sent out into the bloodstream, into the right places where it needs to be, in a bound form. So if you have thyroid hormone issues because of maybe low iodine intake or mercury replacing selenium, that can inhibit or affect ceruloplasmin, which affects where copper goes in the body, right? So there's a lot of moving pieces with copper. It's a little more complicated than just intake, right? As we have sort of been talking about the entire call, but copper deficiency can exist as well. And this is where things get confusing for people because they only ever want to focus on, well, copper toxicity, let's avoid taking copper at all costs, no matter what. That's the only thing that matters. Or those other people that say copper toxicity doesn't exist. And so you can take as much copper as you want indiscriminately for some, you know, for infinite future, right? So both of those things, copper deficiency exists, copper toxicity exists. You can arrive at either of those situations through perturbations in copper intake, but also through these interactions of the hormones and the other minerals, right? So that's very, very important. But then there's this other idea of bioavailability of these elements, which means copper or the other essential elements have particular tissue compartments where they are needed more so than others. And a really good way to think about this is with calcium. A lot of people understand that you can end up with tissue calcification in your heart, and that can block arteries and cause atherosclerosis or a heart attack. So what that means is that calcium, you can have enough calcium intake in the diet, right? But if calcium is getting into the wrong places, that can harm you. Similar idea with copper, iron, and manganese. And this is what we mean when we say bioavailability. It's not only how much or what percentage of that element is absorbable in the gut, but does that element then therefore get sent to the right places where it needs to be? Right. And if you have copper in some brain region where it's not needed, or it builds up in the liver beyond a certain threshold, that's what we mean when we say bioavailability or bioavailability. So there's a delineation that needs to be made there. And a very interesting case or example of bioavailability, you can also look at through the lens of Wilson's disease, which is massive copper toxicity locally in the liver and the gallbladder, because there's sometimes a genetic component wherein the excretion mechanisms for copper don't work as well. And so you can end up with massive copper toxicity in the liver, but the peripheral tissues are all copper deficient at the same time, right? So that adds sort of another layer of complexity to this story where you can have copper toxicity at the same time that you have copper deficiency, and you may need to supplement copper, right, while you have copper deficiency or copper toxicity.
Yeah. Thank you so much for clearing that up. And you kind of touched on my second question, which was where did it start that we should not take calcium supplements, and why is that a myth?
You know, I'm not sure. I think some of it, I'm not really sure, to be quite frank. But it is a weird statement. I think taking calcium supplements individually by themselves for a long period of time in high doses could potentially be harmful. So putting that out there, I think first as a preface, is really important. However, when we understand and look back at, say, like Weston Price's work, or we look at the Maasai and estimates of their calcium intake in their diet, they far exceed the RDAs for calcium. So that's number one. Number two is a lot of people have gotten into, especially in the HTMA space, this misapplication of calcium metabolism, where if they see a very high tissue calcium level on the hair test, they assume that means too much calcium intake in the diet, and the calcium is directly leading to calcification. 100% not true. We can delineate here normal calcium metabolism from tissue calcification, because calcification is a very distinctly, or it's a different metabolic process than normal calcium metabolism. In the literature, it's called dystrophic calcification, where calcium ends up in the wrong places, usually as a result of underlying injury or tissue inflammation. But if you get, say, too much calcium in your diet, it's either excreted, number one, or it's put into your bone tissue as the biggest sink or reservoir for calcium in the body. When we see like a really high tissue calcium level on a hair test, it's basically people misunderstanding the difference between normal calcium metabolism and tissue calcification. And why those two things are distinct is that calcification is driven by inflammation, which can be driven by a lot of different things. I think metals play a very large role in that, much more so than people realize. And it's important to know that when calcium is getting into the wrong places, or you're losing it through the hair a lot more rapidly than you should, that can be the result of metals replacing calcium where it should be, like in the bones or in other tissues. So there's an interaction that exists between calcium and metals that's also not really well understood by a lot of people. And lead, cadmium, aluminum, potentially others, can substitute for calcium all throughout the body and cause calcification and calcium to precipitate into the wrong places and for you to lose calcium through the hair much more rapidly than you should. So it's sort of about understanding the bioavailability piece, the delineation between normal calcium metabolism and calcification, and then those interactions that exist between the metals and calcium as well.
Yeah, man, we could have a whole podcast on calcium. It's so fascinating. You know, with the calcium shell, a big component of that is also the trauma history. And when my calcium shell, when I first did the test, was like, I think it was like 600 or something like that. I had been using drugs and alcohol for like 10 straight years. I had just gotten out of a traumatic breakup. It involved psychosis, drug addiction. It was a horrible time period in my life. And I was like, oh, no wonder I feel like nothing matters and I feel numb and I don't care about anything. So what's up with calcium in response to trauma, like numbing us through that calcification process?
Yeah, that's another really interesting point that you're bringing up, which a lot of people don't understand, which is that the body can actually use calcium. It's a buffering element, right? Mm-hmm. We call calcium a sedative element because it actually calms you down in the face of stress. And that's part of why you know, old remedy of drinking a warm glass of milk before bed can calm people down and put them to sleep. But when you're exposed to overwhelming trauma or something that you can't handle or process, whatever it is, the body can actually raise the tissue calcium level to buffer you against feeling the overwhelm of that trauma. So that I think is extremely interesting. And a calcium shell sometimes can often be the direct result of trauma, among all those other things that we talked about, which are, you know, exposure to metals is sort of a biochemical trauma, right? Slightly different than an emotional trauma, but the body is, it's sort of an adaptive mechanism to prevent you from having to feel that overwhelm in the moment and maybe give you some time to have to try and like process that. But yeah, it's a very interesting mechanism in the calcium shell. What we see almost universally is that people have some really traumatic events that they've been through previous, and the actual like calcium shell manifest on the test is a direct result of that.
Yeah, definitely. So interesting. Some of the neuroscience videos that I've watched that describe like rewiring your brain using like EMDR and stuff like that, the calcium ion is involved in that whole process. And it's the signaling molecule that says, we're going to remember this memory as a trauma. We need to fight or flight every time we get reminded. Or it also is a signaling molecule that says, no need. We'll just make oxytocin. We're nice and chilled. This memory no longer is attached to this stress response. So
really interesting.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. So just to wrap it up, I know that through this mineral balancing program, metal elimination is going to happen. We want it to happen, but it doesn't necessarily feel so great. what can people expect? Or how do they know they might be going through an elimination? And is there anything that they can do to ease the discomfort?
Yeah, 100%. I think that's probably the most important point to mention about mineral balancing. When you go through this program, you're going to go through periods of time where you're actively eliminating a heavy metal. And if we understand heavy metals in their proper context, they're the most toxic substances on the face of the earth. A lot more than synthetic toxicants, a lot more so than biologic toxins as well. So it's when those metals are mobilized from tissue storage sites, wherever they're mobilized from, they have to be put into the blood and then sent out through the liver or kidneys or the skin for excretion. So there can be intermittent or temporary symptoms that you go through that are really uncomfortable. And that can include like headaches, low energy, skin rashes, digestive issues, depending on where that metal is being mobilized from. And then depending also on what route that metal is going to be excreted through, right? So those are like the major detoxification, general detoxification symptoms. But it's also kind of important to keep in mind, mineral balancing can be quite jarring for people because there's a sort of sequence of detoxification that occurs where usually what will happen is that you feel really good on this program and then you feel bad right after that. And, you know, people go, well, holy cow, I was feeling so good for like a couple of weeks or whatever. And then it's like, let's just hold things there. But it doesn't work that way on mineral balancing because the body goes, whoa, we have all this energy, right? And metals are very energetically demanding to move around and eliminate. So the body uses this newfound energy as the minerals are balanced to get to work on eliminating those metals in these various tissue compartments. So you can go from feeling really good to feeling really bad in the span of a couple of weeks. And so it can be jarring in that way. As long as you kind of understand how that works and get a feel for how it works with you individually, and you're working with a good practitioner that can coach you on that, you know, just being aware of that is very important. And then like backing off the supplements that we recommend for a couple of days. If you're doing like the sauna that we recommend, the sauna is really, really powerful. So backing off of that for a couple of days as well is really critical to get through those detoxification or healing reactions. And then we can use specific things like sunflower lecithin, which is a really powerful liver supplement that can help improve liver function actively as those metals are being eliminated. And then like the use of coffee enemas can be really helpful as well, because they help the liver from sort of a different angle as you're going through those eliminations.
Yeah. And about how long do they last, or is there a general time frame?
Not really. Generally speaking, in the beginning, I think eliminations are a little more mild because the body doesn't have that really robust detoxification power in the beginning. So things can be a little more mild in the beginning, but it's not 100%. We kind of have to, the way that I deal with this with my own clients is we go a little slower in the beginning to get a feel and a sense for how you respond individually. Some people, I have clients, this is more rare, but like 10% of clients are like going through a metal elimination and they're like, this is easy. Like, I don't know what, you know, and I'm like, I'm kind of jealous of them a little bit because it's, I wish it was that easy for me. But some people have a little more or worse detoxification symptoms. You know, and so we kind of have to play it by ear. We don't know exactly how the detoxification symptoms are going to affect you. Mm-hmm. So I think generally speaking, earlier on, going a little slower, the idea in the first phase of mineral balancing, whether it's 3 months or 6 months, is to get good at doing these detoxification procedures and get good at recognizing when and if you're going through an elimination. There very much is an art to this. It's not as science-based. Yeah, there's a lot of science behind this, which is all very interesting, but getting good at gracefully moving through these eliminations is very bio-individual, you know, but if you can do that and get a good sense for how you feel when you go through these eliminations, backing off on things, you know, as you need to, and making sure stress in your life is really low, you can be really successful in this protocol.
Yeah, this is where like the brain retraining, the understanding your nervous system, somatic work, the pulling down method, these are all essential to have on board for when this happens, because you can spin out of control thinking, oh my God, there's something else wrong with me. This is not working. I got to do this. I got to make this appointment. And right. Just know that it's just part of it. It's going to pass eventually.
Right. And it really is worth asking the question, well, what did you think was going to happen when we utilized metals, heavy metals?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Awesome. So tell us about your business now. Are you taking clients? Do you have, like, you have your course? You have any other content for people to binge or listen to?
Yeah. So right now I am taking new clients. I made some hires a couple months ago, people that are helping me with responding to emails and that sort of thing.
Awesome.
So I am taking clients right now. I am also doing group coaching with Dr. Leland Stillman. And that's, we're sort of, we were doing that initially for practitioners, right? You went through our program. We kind of put that on hold a little bit for practitioners, but we're going to be reopening in another couple months, the practitioner training. So I think that's going to be fun and interesting. For me, I really have a lot of fun teaching other practitioners about this, because we can really get into the details and have deeper conversations about what the hair test means and really get into the nitty gritty of like metals toxicology. So we're going to be opening up that in a couple months in around like May, June time. We were doing the, you know, practitioner training before. We wanted to add in another, like an exit exam and a little more time with folks, before we certified them so that they can order their own hair tests. So we paused that, but I'm doing that with Dr. Stillman. We should be doing webinars, I think, a little more regularly. He just got married, so he was kind of busy for a little bit, but
oh, nice.
yeah, definitely. So we're going to be doing webinars a little more. I haven't been putting out as much content recently just because I have a full client load. You know, so I might transition over into doing more group coaching with clients as well, so I can work with more people and not be as constrained on time.
Right. Yeah, that's the big conundrum when you max out your one-on-one and then everybody wants to work with you, but you have to figure out a way to get the information out there easier so they can get it and not have to wait forever to work with you.
Right, exactly.
Awesome. Well, what's your website? What's your Instagram? How do people find you?
Yeah, website is just nutritionalanalytics.com. If you want to work with me one-to-one, that's where you go to basically purchase a hair test package. So that's what that is for. But then if you want to really dive a little deeper on content and hit harder some of the concepts that we expounded on today, go to my Instagram. It's just all lowercase, nutritional_analytics. And I've got some content going back a couple of years, you know, not only talking about a lot of these concepts in theory, but then also working through or walking through hair tests with clients that have done really well on the program and showing metal eliminations, that sort of thing. And then if you want to email me, clark@nutritionalanalytics.com is my email. Those you can email me for like general inquiries, or if you want to work with me and want to learn more, we can set up a discovery call that way.
Perfect. All right, Clark. Well, thank you so much for joining me. You always have so much incredible information, and I love the brilliance and the simplicity of this program at the same time.
All right.
All right. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Have a wonderful rest of your day. Bye.
Thank you for having me, Amanda.
Thank you. Thank you, everyone. I am just so thrilled that you're listening to the Healer Revolution podcast. This has been a huge passion project for me and super therapeutic on top of that, helping me to use my voice and connect with other like-minded individuals. So if you're enjoying the podcast, please like and subscribe. Please share on social media or with your audience or friends or loved ones. I truly appreciate it. It does take a lot of time and financial costs to run the podcast, and it is not a moneymaker, let me tell you. So if you are enjoying this, I would truly appreciate your support just by sending me a post, a like, and a subscribe. Thank you so much.